nightly to our favorite show, radio. Oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again, radio. I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we'll enjoy intrigue and suspense with Return Trip from June of 1946. But first, let's discover why crime doesn't pay. Crime Does Not Pay was a syndicated program produced by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. It was based on the famous short films of the same name and first heard on WMGM New York in October of 1949 with Donald Buca as star. The show told of perpetrators of crime, often innocent kids who just got in too deep. It ran through 1951 as a WMGM program, then was picked up by Mutual in January of 52 and concluded in December of that year. While the program overall never quite competed as successfully as most detective programs, nevertheless, it caught the attention of many listeners, and its famous title continues to be remembered until this very day. Crime Does Not Pay. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear with Crime Does Not Pay and Gasoline Cocktail, first broadcast on December 12th of 1949. Another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
Major Bose, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Burton Marr, J. Miss and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
Crime Does Not Pay.
I'm going out.
This time of night? What for?
The fire is near here.
You and your fire. What are you, a little boy? Stop chasing fire engines. Grow up.
That was my mistake, growing up.
Of all the silly things to say.
Silly, that... What else is there to do for excitement?
I could mention a few things, like taking your wife out, for instance.
I mean real excitement. Action. Like the ladders going up. The hoses dragged up the fire escapes. People jumping into nets. All the bells, the sirens.
Oh, what's the use? They're coming back already. A small fire.
Someday there's going to be a real fire in this neighborhood. A real fire.
Nick, stop it. When you talk like that, you frighten me.
In the interest of good citizenship and law enforcement, we present Crime Does Not Pay, based on the famous Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer series of short subjects. In just a moment, you will hear Gasoline Cocktail, starring Bela Lugosi. Now, Crime Does Not Pay, starring Bela Lugosi as Nick Segedin in Gasoline Cocktail. Sometimes the trouble begins out of sheer frustration. The need for excitement, the need to blow off steam, can cause a man's mind to work in devious ways. There's the thrill holdup, the beating administered more to the world at large than to the immediate victim. The theft for the sake of the dare it represents. With Nick Segedin, it was the lighted match, the licking flame, and of course the roar and scream of the fire engines racing through the city streets.
front door. Line up 74 and 56 engines. There's pipe standing by.
Third floor, gone, Chief.
All right. Pull out the men from 25 foot. Denny, turn in the second. This one's too hot for us to handle without help.
Yes, sir.
Chief, the 6th Battalion ordered me to report to you, sir. We're 22 truck.
22 truck. When did you get here?
First due on the 2nd.
All right, I'm releasing you. Go back to quarters.
Yes, sir.
Driver, notify dispatcher. All second alarm equipment released and sent back to quarters.
Well, Chief, you almost had yourself a master, didn't you?
Oh, Warren. Well, how's the fire marshal's business?
Still doing things with magnifying glasses?
Microscopes these days. I see you had 3 boys hurt.
Nothing too bad. Punctured hand, cut cheek. We were lucky this time. The stairwell was like a chimney. Fire mushroomed up onto the 3rd floor. Took 6 women down the ladders. You find anything yet?
Looks like the usual. Baby carriage full of trash under the stairs. Cigarette, match, boom. I'll see you around, Chief.
Right, Warren. Chances are you will.
I beg your pardon, sir. You are the fire marshal?
Yes. How'd you know?
I've seen the car in which you came to the fire. Since I was a boy in Hungary, I followed the fires.
I guess boys are boys all over the world.
Yes, all over. But I wish to know, have you found out how this started?
Found out where it started? Why do you want to know?
Oh, it's just that I'm interested in these things. And this is a bad one.
Bad isn't the word for it. We're just lucky no life was lost.
Yes, very lucky indeed. Thank you very much. If people only were more careful where they throw matches.
Sylvie, I'm going out.
This time of night? What for?
The fire is near here.
You and your fire. What are you, a little boy? Stop chasing fire engines. Grow up.
That was my mistake, growing up.
Of all the silly things to say.
Silly, is it? What else is there to do for excitement?
I could mention a few things, like taking your wife out, for instance.
In the old days in Budapest, you ran after the engines with me.
Now I wish I hadn't.
There was excitement then. Now what? A job to go to. With men I would not care to look at. Then back to this house, day after day, night after night.
No, Nick, not night after night. And even though you don't care to look at the men, you look at a girl, all right.
Sylvie, this is...
I know her name, Edna Hall, and her address, 5546 Erie Street. Yes, I know. But if you think, Nicholas Segerton, that I let go of you, you are wrong. Wrong.
But don't you see this is all in your mind?
In my mind? I walked past her house.
Of course there is a house in your mind. This is like myself and the engines. You wish for excitement, and there is none. So, my poor Sylvie, you make it up out of your head that I, your Nicholas, go for rides in a car with another woman. Tonight, my dear Edna, tonight you are more lovely than I ever seen you.
Oh, Nick, you're teasing me again.
Listen.
What's the matter, darling?
You hear them? The fire engines.
Oh, that, yes.
I will go to a fire, too.
Nick, you're like a little boy.
You do not mind this?
No, I don't. But a cop would mind the way you're passing red lights.
Oh, for a moment, I think I'm really driving the big truck.
But you're not.
Oh, Nick, there they are. See all the red lights up there?
I see them. Edna, you're excited, too.
Oh, who wouldn't be?
It's nothing. They haven't even taken the hose out of the hose truck. There's nothing to watch.
Why, Nick, shouldn't you be glad it wasn't, Nick?
But perhaps it was discovered too soon. Oh, yes. I'm glad. Now, let's stop here, near the park. It's a good place to stop, huh, Edna?
Oh, yes, darling. Oh, Nick, I wish I could bring you home with me. But you know how Dad is. He thinks you're too middle-aged for me.
Perhaps I am.
Nick. Nick, you're wonderful.
And you are more than wonderful. I cannot be without you.
Is this a proposal, Nick? Are you asking me to marry you?
I cannot ask that, my beloved. She's not well. There cannot be a divorce.
I'm sorry, Nick. I guess you'd better take me home.
So, you too are like all the others.
Nick!
The rides, the kisses, but always we must be married. Is love nothing in this country without marriage? Nothing?
Nick, people will hear you.
Oh, so let it be. I take you home. Again, I'm rejected. But there will be a day. A day for Nicholas Segedin will come. Soon.
Heaven's name, are you doing in that closet?
Looking for something.
Why didn't you ask me first?
All right, I ask you second. The glass jug, which came to mind from your father. Where is it?
Right up there on the shelf. I straightened the closet yesterday.
Thank you. You need this rag, Sylvia?
No. What do you want with it?
Always questions.
Oh, Nick. You've been like your old self these past few days. You've been home at night.
I told you once I'm not changed.
What do you want with the jug?
I am cleaning the seeds in the car. So I will draw gasoline from the tank into the jug, and with that rug, I will wipe. Very simple, isn't it?
Oh, be careful, won't you, dear?
Careful.
Yes, gasoline burns and explodes. Be careful.
Yes. I will be careful, very careful. But like everything in this world, if the gasoline explodes in the proper place, it is all right.
Explodes? Where, Nick? Where?
Where else but in the motor of the car. Where else?
Almost ready to turn out the light, Jen?
Yes, I am ready, Edna.
All right, hop her to bed.
Oh, your bed is softer than mine. That's one reason why I like to spend the night at your house.
What's the other reason? I like to talk in the dark like this.
What about you? Oh, just anything. It's easy to talk in the dark. That's why I come over. You know, Edna, you're only a few years older than I am, but you know so much more.
I'm flattered. I wish it were true.
Jen! What's that?
Through the window. Somebody threw something. It's burning!
Fireman Denny, truck 25 reporting, Chief. We found a couple of roasts on the first floor.
Whereabouts, Denny?
Room where the fire started. So it seems to have been a bedroom, sir. The metal frame of the bed is still recognizable.
Anything on the man in the other bedroom?
Yeah, doctor said it's smoke poisoning and shock. You'll be all right.
Okay. There's a public ambulance coming down from City Hospital. Have it take the bodies to the morgue. But don't bring them out on the street until the ambulance is here.
Yes, sir.
And notify the dispatcher I'm releasing 22 truck and 74 engine. Well, if it weren't for those two deaths, this might not have been as bad as it looks.
In just a moment, Crime Does Not Pay will continue with Gasoline Cocktail.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Now, we continue with Crime Does Not Pay, starring Bela Lugosi as Nick Segedin in Gasoline Cocktail. When Whenever death has been caused by fire, even under the least suspicious circumstances, the fire marshal is joined in his investigation by the district attorney's office and the police. Therefore, the day following the death of Edna Hall and her guest Janice, three men checked over the wreckage of what had been the girl's bedroom. Fire Marshal Warren, Assistant District Attorney Morrison, and Detective Stein.
The girls must have been sleeping soundly for it to get so much headway.
A neighbor who pulled the box said he heard what sounded like an explosion.
Seen anything of a gas heater or an oil stove?
The building steam heated.
Oh.
The men on the first truck to respond said it looked like an oil fire to them.
Hello.
Find something, Marshal?
What's this look like to you, Morrison?
Piece of glass. Too heavy for a light bulb, but...
What do you think, Stein?
Oh, perfume bottle, maybe. One of those things girls like to have on dressing tables.
It's a mighty big bottle. Look at the curvature of the glass.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Oh, wouldn't the heat of the fire have melted it?
Not without blackening it some. Anyhow, I found this in a corner behind the fire.
Behind it?
In this oven?
Yeah. Notice that corner near where the window was? Barely a smoke mark. Something forced the fire away from there and tossed this glass fragment in there.
Explosion is right then. Hey, wait a minute. How about this?
Looks like the neck and the handle of a gallon jug.
Saw it a minute ago and passed it up. It's the same glass as the Marshall's fragment.
The microscopes will prove that for us. Now hold it up to light a minute.
Yeah, sure.
Here. There. See those bits of, well, lint, I guess, on the inside of the bottleneck?
Yeah. It looked like it.
One will get you 10 there. That's how it started, all right. A jug of gasoline with a lighted rag in its neck passed through the window. Boom.
Molotov cocktail.
What's that, Stan?
I said Molotov cocktail. We used beer bottles against Nazi tanks in the Bulge. Same principle. And pretty much the same effect.
We'll try not to be too long, Mr. Hall. In fact, I'm sure the doctors won't permit us to stay more than a few minutes.
That's all right, Mr. Morrison. Anything I can do to help.
We're convinced, Mr. Hall, from various bits of physical and chemical evidence, that the fire in your daughter's room began with a gasoline explosion.
Yes, we think it came from outside, Mr. Hall. A gasoline grenade through the window.
From outside? Oh. Then... you think it was murder, too.
Do you, Mr. Hall?
It's a grim charge on just my personal dislike of a man.
As someone who had cause to, well, want your daughter out of the way?
Yes. She thought she was in love with him. I refused to let him in the house. She was meeting him outside. I knew it. Then she found out he was married. She broke it off with him. He was... I didn't like him, that's all.
You know his name, Mr. Hall?
Yes, it's Nick Zegedin. He worked where Edna did. You can get his address there.
Yes?
Mrs. Zegedin?
I am she.
I'm from the district attorney's office. My name is Morrison. This is Fire Marshal Warren, Detective Stein. May we come in, please? You can see our credentials if you wish.
Oh, no, no. Come in.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Please, sit down.
We'd like to see your husband. We understand he hasn't been to work for 3 days.
I'd like to see him, too.
When did you see him last, Mrs. Segerton?
Three nights ago. He went out. He did not come back.
Did he do anything funny that night, ma'am?
No, nothing. Just... he went out to clean the seat of the car.
With what, Mr. Segerton?
Oh, with gasoline.
Where'd he get it? The gasoline, I mean.
Oh, from the car. In a glass jug in which
glass
we had wine.
Well, that makes some sense.
What do you think he has done?
We think he killed someone. A girl named Edna Hall. And we think he used the gasoline.
Oh.
You better tell us where he's gone, ma'am.
I don't know. I knew she was dead. I saw it in the paper. I don't know where he went.
One question, ma'am. Does your husband have any family anywhere in this country?
Yes. An uncle, Joseph, in Miami. But he wouldn't go there.
Thank you, Mrs. Segerton. He might not go there, and then again, he just might.
All right, Stein. It looks as if you're going south this year, if only for a day or two.
Well, nice place you've got here, Mr. Sigurdin. Bet you do a swell business during the season, eh?
Good. Not so good. We get along. You see what you like?
You betcha. 5 pounds assorted.
5 pounds? We must make up. It's not ready.
Not many 5-pound customers this time of year in Miami,
huh? Not many. You do not mind waiting?
Oh, no. Go to it. What I hear at the hotel, sweets by Sigurdin are worth waiting for.
You try a truffle while you're ate, yes?
Hey, thanks. Yeah, that's good. Very good. Service like this we don't get in New York.
Huh, you live in New York?
Yeah, my hometown.
I have nephew in New York.
That's so? What's his name? Maybe I know him.
If you do, you know my name. He is Nicholas Sigurdin, and that is a name nobody forgets. Besides, he moved just last week.
That's so? Where to?
Not far. He write me postal card, say he is tired of New York City. He moved to East Orange, New Jersey. Street with very funny name. Porter Street. 118 Porter Street. Like maybe the street carry his suitcase for him.
It's a very funny name. Funny joke. You got a phone booth here?
Yes, sir. Right behind.
Thanks. While you're finishing up that box, I think I'll make a call. I just remembered. I've got to warn someone about a fellow I know. A fellow who likes to play with matches.
You like the fire in the fireplace, Nicholas?
Very much. Why?
You stare at it so. All day as you watch the fire.
I'm lucky, Lena. When I rented the room from your mother, I didn't expect that her daughter and the parlor, fireplace and all were included.
Nicholas, you make fun of me.
I should say not. But of course not.
Then the log falls, so it always makes me jump.
Time for another log, isn't it?
No, it is too warm in here, Nicholas. You do not need another log. This fire will be too high.
Fires are never too high, Lena. Watch the flames. See? It's like a dance. So light, so graceful. But such power, such strength in the flame, Lena. Even from a little match. A whole house sometimes from a single little match.
Nicholas, you must not talk like this.
What then? Must I talk about your eyes, your hair, your pink cheeks?
You do make fun of me, Nicholas. I don't know about flames, but I know when someone makes fun of me.
You are a silly one. Come back here.
No, I will go upstairs. I don't like you, Nicholas. I thought I did, but I don't.
What's wrong with me? Lena, my dear.
I don't know. In time, maybe something is wrong. No, Nicholas, I do not want to sit and talk with you anymore.
They all run away like rabbits, and they don't know why. Tomorrow I find another room. I cannot live with rabbits, but this rabbit will feel my anger. This she will know before very long.
Miss Korski?
Yes?
Your mother in, Miss Korski?
No, officer. She's downtown.
Well, may we come in? This is Mr. Morrison, New York District Attorney, and Fire Marshal Warren.
Yes, you may come in.
Right, gentlemen. All right, Mr. Morrison, you can take it from here.
Thank you. Miss Korski, is there a rumor here by the name of Nick Sigurdin?
Nick? Yes, sir.
Is he at home?
I think so. He has the front room, second floor.
You ever notice anything, peculiar about this man, miss?
Peculiar? No, only he likes big fires in the fireplace.
Sounds like your man,
gentlemen. Yes, let's drop in on him.
Right. Which way, miss?
Upstairs. First door on the right.
Thanks, miss.
I wouldn't come any further, gentlemen, if I were you.
All right, take it in. We're here to take you in for arson and the murder of Edna and Janice Hall.
This is easy to say. I have a bottle, a beer bottle, gentlemen, filled with gasoline, corked with a piece of rag. I have intended it as a parting gift for my landlady and her daughter. The house is full of mice. I find it a very effective means.
No use, Tegadin. We've got you dead to rights, and you know it.
One step more, gentlemen.
Warrant. Look out. Get that bottle, Morrison.
All right, I've got it. Nice shooting, officer.
Oh.
All right, it doesn't hurt that much, Secondin. Only through your shoulder. It'll be fixed up good as new long before you burn for what you've done.
Now, here in person is Bela Lugosi.
It is perfectly possible that Nick Secondin is more to be pitied than censored. Legally, Nick was sane, and he paid the penalty exacted by society. But society itself bears a large part of Nick's guilt. Nick never found proper training and education. Nick never found the opportunity to release his energies in the right direction. So you see, as always, it comes back to us, the responsible citizens of our community. If we see to it that the roots of crime, the social conditions which breed gangsters and warp people like Nick are removed, we will have taken a long step on the way to a better world for ourselves as well as the criminals. Crime does not pay. Crime Does Not Pay is written by Ira Marion and directed by Marks D. Lowe, with music composed and conducted by John Gart. Technical advisor is Burton B. Turkis. The events, characters, and names used in the story you've just heard are fictitious. Any similarity is purely coincidental.
There you have, from December of 1949, Crime Does Not Pay and Gasoline Cocktail, starring Bela Lugosi. In a moment, we'll return with Suspense and Return Trip from June of 1946 as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, was first heard on CBS in June of 1942. It continued on the air for the next 20 years under many talented directors. Each brought his own mark to Suspense, making it one of the most diverse, unusually broad-based programs on radio. Suspense dealt with life or death situations. That element was usually established within the first few moments. Then, through characterization and audio coloring, little touches were added to heighten the sensation of impending doom. That was what Suspense was all about, the slow tightening of the knot. Suspense was known as the Actors' Theater. People like Cary Grant, Charles Laughton, Gregory Peck, Peter Lorre, Henry Fonda, and Orson Welles headed the casts. Many top film stars asked to return for encore performances. Early in the program, a general format was established and continued throughout. Suspense opened to the ringing of soft church bells, intermingled with stinging music. By the fall of its first year, Joseph Kearns, the grim-voiced fellow known as the Man in Black, was aboard as narrator. That continued through the Roma Wine years, with Truman Bradley, another of radio's most distinguished voices, doing the commercials. The Man in Black had disappeared by the time the program went to 60 Minutes in 1948 and finally concluded in 1957. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear and Suspense with Return Trip from June of 1946. Another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
Suspense. Tonight, Roma Wines bring you Mr. Elliot Reed as star of Return Trip, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Roma Wines by William Speer.
Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, as Roma Wines bring you Elliot Reed in a remarkable tale of
suspense.
Yes. There's someone to see you.
Yeah?
This is Superintendent Andrews of the State Institution.
Oh. What do you got there?
I've set up a dictaphone out in the hall. Careful of the wire, nurse, when you close the door, please.
The doctor said...
Yes, I'll make it as brief as possible. You may go now, nurse.
Very well.
Do you mind if I hook up this microphone at the head of the bed?
Suit yourself, fella.
Well, it was a choice between a dictaphone and a stenographer, and I figured that in your condition...
I don't feel too bad. Well, go on, ask your questions.
Now, I understand you were driving the bus. Tell me what happened.
You mean I can tell it my own way?
That's right.
Great. I had an uncle once, you know, that was a writer. He wouldn't have gone near this kind of a story, though, with a 10-foot pen. No, he went in for happy endings. Uncle Mort wouldn't even have liked the beginning of this one. Kind of dreary-like up there at the asylum that afternoon. You remember, there'd been quite a snowfall the week before. And far as the eye could see, everything was a dirty gray. Like a corpse that's been waiting too long for the undertaker. Well, around 4 o'clock, it got so dark, the lights had to be turned on in the asylum. And then the wind started moaning like a lonely banshee. Fine day for a murder, as the fella said. Well, there were 3 passengers sitting in the bus when I went outside for the return trip. 2 men and a woman. Maybe I ought to call her a girl, because she wasn't really much more than that. Anyway, these 3 passengers all had return tickets, and I went down the aisle collecting them. Tickets, please. May I have your tickets, please?
Driver, how soon do we start?
Right away, miss.
But we're 2 minutes late already, driver. Oh, these little jerkwater bus lines never keep to their schedules. Now we'll never get out of these mountains before that blizzard lets loose.
Can I have your ticket, please, mister?
You really think there'll be a storm?
Why, sure, it can't fail. And lady, when they have snow up in these godforsaken mountains... Well, this morning, on the bus, coming up, a man was telling me...
Well, here we go, folks. Bag was sitting right across the aisle from the girl, second row from the front. Halfway back in the bus sat the 3rd passenger, all huddled up in his overcoat. He didn't open his trap. Well, that was the picture as we swung out onto the highway for the return trip. This guy in back of me seemed to be itchy to start a conversation with somebody as soon as we got rolling.
Well, might as well get acquainted, miss. 50 miles before we get down to civilization, you know. John Willard is the name. I said,
I beg your pardon. Were you speaking to me?
Well, yes.
I'm afraid I was...
Yeah, sure. These visits to the asylum, they're always depressing, aren't they?
Well, this is my first time.
Oh? Some friend?
My husband.
Husband? Oh, well, now that's too bad. I hope he... Hey, what's that?
Some kind of a siren.
Yeah, that's the asylum alarm, all right.
But driver,
one of the inmates must be playing hide-and-seek with the keepers. Happens every once in a while.
Gosh, what if it's my brother?
Oh? He the busting-out kind?
Well, it kind of upsets him to see one of the family, but then if we don't come to see him, it upsets him even more.
I see what you mean.
Do they always catch them?
Well, they tell me the place has never lost a customer yet.
Oh, you know, a moment ago, I was praying that it wasn't Jim, but now I don't know. Even if they had to... Well, I mean, it would be better than seeing him as he was today. Anything would be better than...
Listen. Hey, that's a police siren. Sounds like they're almost on top of us. Yes, there they are.
Look out, they're going to pass us.
Pass nothing, they're flagging me down. All right, just keep your seats, everybody.
They're guards.
With rifles.
Hey, where... We're looking for somebody.
Yeah, we heard the asylum alarm. Is someone...
Seen anyone along the road?
Not even a jackrabbit.
Officer, who escaped?
Greg, Albert Gregg.
Oh. Whew,
what a relief. Hey, Holly, take yourself a walk down the aisle and keep your rifle ready when you look behind those back seats.
Are you kidding? When was this coming out party?
I don't know. Maybe as much as a couple of hours ago.
Does this Gregg have a gun?
Can't guarantee he hasn't. But it was a file that sprung him. A tiny steel file. Must have been working away at the bar since the day he was committed, a month ago.
His stay was short.
Nobody back here.
Okay, now, check the gents for identification. You know how it is, Dwyer. You can't take chances.
Oh, of course not. Here's mine.
Huh? Oh, okay, Dwyer.
Your name, Frank Keniston? You can read, can't you?
Friendly cuss, ain't you?
You know, that's the first beat that passenger has let out. I was beginning to think he was a deaf mute.
Yeah? Well, here, driver, you can have this stuff back.
Oh, thanks.
John Willard?
Yes, sir.
Okie doke. Come on, Denton, let's scram. We gotta find Greg before he finds anybody.
Yeah. Hey, driver, you can turn around now and go back.
Go back?
Go back? Why?
Oh, no, no.
This Greg is a killer. What I mean is, when the mood strikes him, he strikes.
Well, what's that got to do with us turning back?
Didn't I tell you this man kills even without reason? Now he's got plenty of reason. He's got to get out of these mountains, but quick. If he's down the road, there are lots of ways he could stop a bus. I say turn back.
But that blizzard's liable to break any minute now. We could be snowbound up here for days. And if I have to spend another night in that asylum, so help me, they'd have to keep me there. Oh, listen, driver, listen
to me,
please.
Just a second, Mr. Willard. You're just one passenger. There are three. Now, let's take a vote. What about you, miss?
Whatever you say.
Mr. Keniston?
I say keep going.
That settles. Hurry up, Denton.
Wait a minute. What does this killer Greg look like?
Description says, slight build, weight about 140.
Dark hair, brown eyes, 27 years old, Denton, get the lead out of your britches.
Yeah, but you know, I still...
We warned them, didn't we? Now, if they meet up with him, it's their funeral.
Yeah.
Well, we can take care of ourselves, fellas. Well, after the guards left, I really set that bus to rolling. Out of the mirror up above the driver's seat, I could see that the girl was plenty scared. But she had nerve, I'll say that for her. When we slid around some of those snowbank curves, her lips would be drawn so tight the lipstick had a white border. But she didn't say boo. Willard, the windbag across the aisle from her, gave up trying to draw her into a conversation. And as for the third passenger, that English guy, Keniston, sitting halfway towards the back there, he kept acting like a clam afraid of losing its oyster. Might as well have had lockjaw, if you get what I mean. Well, we hadn't gone more than another mile or two before the wind started to rise and kept it up until you'd have thought all the devils in hell were trying to break loose. It got black as the inside of a tomb until the snow started to fall. But with that wind whipping it around, it didn't exactly fall. Mister, that's what I call a blizzard.
This is getting on my nerves. What have we got here anyway? A collection of zombies? Somebody say something!
I was just going to say...
You were going to say that the weather is rotten.
Yeah, and she can say that again.
But that isn't what I was going to say.
No? What then, lady?
It occurred to me why the guards asked for identification.
Huh?
The description of Killer Greg. Slight build, 140 pounds, dark hair, brown eyes, 27 years old.
So what?
It's a remarkable thing. That description would fit you, Mr. Willard.
Huh? Oh?
And Mr. Keniston, too.
What's that? Me?
That's a peculiar thing, isn't it, driver?
Yeah. Come to think of it, both of them could fit that description. And I've also heard that he's got a very soft face, almost like a woman.
What do you think, Mr. Keniston?
I don't happen to feel like talking.
Yeah? Well, personally, I think the more I think of what she said, the more remarkable it becomes.
Yeah, she's got something there.
Only remarkable isn't the word.
What do you mean, Mr. Willard?
This man, Greg, may be insane, but he's not dumb. Now, put yourself in his place. He knows he hasn't got a ghost of a chance making a getaway in the asylum clothing, see? So he borrows the wardrobe and identification of some stranger. Do you follow me?
We're way ahead of you, Willard.
It wouldn't be difficult for a killer.
I should say not. But that still isn't the end of his problem, see? He's fighting against time.
Yes. He's got to get out of these godforsaken mountains down to civilization before they can throw a noose around the whole area. And he knows if he's brought back alive, he'll be wearing a straitjacket until he's old as Methuselah.
You've got quite an imagination, Willard.
Yeah? Well, thanks. Now, the odds that Greg will be able to get himself transportation are mighty slim, except for this bus line. So let's suppose...
You've got a great imagination, all right. You got it all figured out. Bit too fat, if you ask me. Remember, please, sir, you're the one who was so dead set against turning back.
Really, Keniston? Well, I'll leave it to the lady here and the driver. Do I act like a lunatic? Huh? Well,
Search me.
There were times, long periods of time, when Jim didn't either. My husband, I mean. That was the terrible part of it. He'd be just like the old days, and we'd be so happy together, and then all of a sudden, just without warning, he...
Oh, I heard a lot of cases like that. Well, they tell me that sometimes it takes half a dozen of those special doctors, those...
Psychiatrists?
Yeah, psychiatrists. Yeah, well, sometimes they got to put a person under a microscope and study him for a long time before they can be sure, one way or the other. And many's the time they make mistakes. Well, I heard it one time when...
Shut up! Nobody's going to talk like that about me. It's Kennison that's been acting crazy. And I'll bet it wouldn't take a half a dozen psychiatrists to...
What's that?
Huh?
Oh,
an avalanche!
No,
an avalanche!
No,
well, it's coming down! No, no.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you as star Elliot Reed in Return Trip, a radio play by Maurice Zim. Roma Wines' presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now, Roma Wines bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Elliot Reed, starring with Wally Mayer as Mr. Willard, Kathy Lewis as the girl, and Raymond Lawrence as Mr. Keniston in Return Trip, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Well, Superintendent, what do you think of the yarn so far?
Let's hear the rest of it.
Okay. If you'll help me get a swig of that water.
Sure.
The way they got me rigged up here. Oh, thanks. Let's see now, where was I? Oh, yeah. Acts 2, 3, and 4 coming up. Well, after the avalanche struck, I just sat there gripping the steering wheel, sort of stunned. There wasn't a sound except for the wind. And that was muffled by the snow barrier that packed us in. Even on the far side, the bus was buried up to the middle of the windows. Well, all this was only a matter of seconds, I suppose. And then suddenly the quiet was broken by the most gosh-awful racket. It was as if somebody had up and given the signal for my passengers to go completely nuts.
Get me out of here! Get me out of here!
Look out! Willard's got an axe!
The axe? Take it away from him!
Let go of it, Willard! Let go of that axe!
No!
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 That did it.
He's the one.
Lucky I saw him dead, that fire axe. It's what the district attorney likes to call a lethal weapon.
And then some. Step back, he's coming too.
Tie him up.
You'll find a rope in the dashboard compartment. Get it for me.
Driver, I'll report you for this.
You will, huh?
I was going to smash your window so we could get out of here.
Oh, yeah?
Sure. What did you think I...
Oh... Oh, so that's it, huh?
Here's the rope, driver.
Now, look here. Wait a minute. You can't do this. You can't tie me up, you fools. I'm not Killer Greg.
Maybe he isn't.
Maybe. But like that guard said, we can't take chances. If you're innocent, mister, you can prove it to the authorities.
If we ever live that long, have you forgotten we're trapped here by an avalanche and a blizzard that could go on and on and on?
Just the same.
This is ridiculous.
Hey, Missy. You feeling all right?
No, I'm not crazy, driver. But I guess I was a little. Actually, there's no proof that Killer Greg is on this bus.
Well, if you put it that way...
It's all my fault, and I'm sorry. My only excuse is that I was just so upset by seeing Jim, my husband.
Well, I still say...
No. Now we've got to start acting like rational human beings. Let poor Mr. Willard up from the floor.
Thanks, lady.
Well, all right. But I'm warning you, Willard, no funny stuff.
Oh, snap out of it, driver, will you? We've got to get out of this mess. Hand me that axe.
Do I look that dumb?
Oh, all right. Then use it yourself. Smash the window so we can crawl out.
Willard, even you don't look that dumb. What makes you think the windows won't open?
Huh?
Then open one.
What for?
The lead in the blizzard?
But we've got to get out of here, driver.
Not me. It would take a bear to make even a city block in that windswept hell.
We can't stay here.
Why not? We're not freezing. Yet.
The driver's right. Our best chance is to sit pat until the storm lets up.
Yeah, but what if it doesn't, huh? What if it lasts longer than we do?
What then, huh? What then? What
Shut
then?
Up! Blowing your top won't do any good, Willard. Nobody's ever confused me with Pollyanna. But things could be worse. This is as good an igloo as any, and if and when the weather clears, well, we can send out a party for help.
Or maybe a road-clearing crew will come to our rescue.
Yes. Yes, I suppose that's the same thing to do. Wait here.
How about you, Willard? You also decided to do the sane thing?
I don't like that crack. You one more like it?
No. Look, we're not starting that again. Now, it's going to be a long night, and we might just as well make ourselves comfortable and try to get some sleep.
Sleep.
Cut it out. Now, miss, you take the back seat. It's the only one that runs the full width of the bus. You can use your lap robe for a quilt.
All right, driver. I want to apologize again to everyone for the way I behaved. I casting suspicion.
Forget it. Need any help?
No, thanks. I just don't know what came over me starting that idiotic talk. Please believe that I did. Why?
What's the matter?
Why are you staring at the floor?
Well, say something.
Look. Look.
A file. A tiny steel file.
The one that Greg...
After the avalanche hit, there was a mad scramble. One of you lost it then. One of you is Greg. Killer Greg! Let me out of here!
Well, we just let her wear herself out, kicking and banging on the door. Nobody said a word. Willard and Kinniston just stared at me and at each other. By and by, the girl stopped her fussing, and then she stood and stared at the three of us in rotation. It would have made your flesh crawl. Outside, the blizzard was getting worse, if possible. Finally, I reached into the watch pocket of my pants and brought out the old timepiece.
What time is it, driver?
I broke the crystal. It still says a quarter of four.
It's 5:30. Only an hour and a half since we started out. An hour and a half.
5:30 in the afternoon. The very best we're stuck until morning.
14, 16 hours.
Might as well be forever.
Look, miss, we just gotta make the best of it. I still think you ought to go back to the rear seat.
And sleep?
If you can.
Willard, the driver and myself will be keeping a rather close eye on each other. In the light of recent developments, you'll be all right. Driver, give me that axe.
Huh?
Let her have it for her protection.
Sure. Sure, let her have it.
Yes. Yes, give it to me.
Okay. You holding on to the file, too?
Of course she is. The file could also be a lethal weapon.
Well, she took the axe and the file back to the rear seat with her, and we all sat down to wait. Those were the longest seconds of the longest minutes of the longest hours that ever... Well, somehow it got to be 9 o'clock, 10, 11. Finally, it was midnight. Ever fought against sleep, with the cold numbing you and the wind lulling you? Sometimes even the fear of sudden death can't win against those odds. Time and again, the girl's eyes would close just for a second, and then they stayed closed longer, and her head nodded and her body slumped over against the corner of the seat. I got up and started down the aisle.
Where are you going?
Shh, Kenneth. Can't you see she's asleep?
Where are you going?
Her lap robe slipped to the floor. I was going to pick it up and cover her so she wouldn't freeze. Any objections?
I'll do it. Oh, no, you won't. Go ahead, driver.
See, Kenniston? Willard thinks I should do it. That makes it 2-1.
Help me! Help me with this wildcat! Get that file away from her before she jabs my eyes out!
She was like a devil on a pinwheel. And I was lucky to tear loose before she did any more than nick me about the face. Afterwards, when Willard told her what I was up to, she apologized. But I didn't go near her again all the rest of that night. Well, about 5 o'clock, the blizzard stopped. And at 7, the sun managed to break through. Then we held a council of war.
We can't send out for help.
Why not?
Don't you see, Mr. Willard? If we split up the men, whichever of you is Greg would have too good an opportunity. Whether he goes or stays.
You could go alone.
I'd never make it.
We could all go together. How about that, driver?
Well, no, I'd rather stick with a bus, Keniston. But before we decide anything, let's get out and look around. We got a window open on the far side of the bus and crawled through, the girl first. She was still clutching the axe and the fire.
Here. Come here and look!
What?
Another few yards and we'd have escaped the avalanche entirely. We can shovel our way out. I'm sure we can.
There were two shovels in the tool compartment at the tail guard of the bus. That only let two men shovel at a time, with the third man getting a breather meanwhile. It took a lot of shoveling.
What's the matter, driver? Hurt your hand?
Oh, nothing much.
Ooh.
This feels good to take off those stiff leather gloves.
Nasty blisters you got on that right hand. I'm thumb and finger.
Hey, Dennison, are you shoveling or talking? We'll never get out of here at this rate.
That's your turn anyway. I'm tired.
Not as tired as Willard looks. I'll relieve him.
No. No, that's all right. I can keep going yet for a while.
Okay, then. Keniston?
Yeah.
Let me take a turn. I know I won't be much help, but I can at least try.
No. You're mountain guard. Though I'm sure you could do as well as Keniston. Keniston? Where's Keniston?
Well, he's right. Stop him!
Keniston was making a mad dash through the snow. Willard dropped his shovel and tore after him. I yelled for Willard to let him go, but I don't think he even heard me. For a while, it looked like Keniston was going to make it. But then he floundered and fell in a snowdrift. And before he could get underway again, Willard nailed him.
Well, he stayed put for a while.
What'd you do, knock him out?
Well, what else was there to do?
Oh.
I know all the time it was Keniston.
You think his running away proves it?
It's the same as if he confessed. He knew it was his last and only chance.
What are we going to do with him now?
Tie him up. Then we're getting him and the bus out of here. Say, I wonder if there's a reward.
In no time at all, we had the bus clear and headed for civilization. Those snow-covered mountain roads weren't exactly my idea of a speedway, but I gave my motor the gun. Willard and the girl didn't take their eyes off Keniston. I kept watching him, too, out of the mirror over the driver's seat. He looks like he's coming, too.
Don't worry, driver. Those knots I made in the rope won't give. Besides, I'm keeping the axe handy just in case.
He's opening his eyes.
Watch him now. Watch him.
Yes, watch me. And listen to me, too.
Shut up, Keniston. I'll stop this bus and put you out for good.
Not before I've had my say. Willard and you too, lady. Why do you think I tried to make a break for it?
Because you...
You're Killer Greg.
You fools! You blind, stupid fools! Was it my watch that had his crystal smashed at 3:45 yesterday afternoon?
So it was mine. So what?
At 3:45 yesterday afternoon, Killer Greg waylaid the real driver of this bus and took his place.
What?
That's how the crystal came to be broken.
Shut up, Keniston. You can't talk your way out of this.
It could be a coincidence.
Sure.
That's what I thought, too. Coincidence. Until I noticed the blisters on the thumb and first two fingers of the right hand. A file would make blisters like that. A file held in the right hand of Killer Greg.
Look at it. Look at it. It's true.
Greg.
Don't come a step closer, any of you. If you make the slightest move, and I'll crash the whole lot of us.
Don't do it, Greg. Stop the bus. We won't do anything.
It was a perfect plan. It had to work. If only that avalanche hadn't come along. But I'll still make it. I'll make it even if I have
to. Look out!
It rolled over and over and over and over. The bus and the glass all smashed. Everybody was all mangled and...
All right. Go to sleep now.
Sleep? Who can go to sleep? Who can go to sleep? Anyway, I outlived those three. Killer Greg.
Elliot Reed appeared through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures, producers of To Each His Own. Next Thursday, same time, Roma Wines will bring you Mr. Leon Ames as star of Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills.
Produced by William Spear for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California.
From June of 1946, it's been Suspense with Return Trip. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today, but join us again next week and invite a friend to listen and enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those thrilling days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show.
This program is produced and transcribed in Hollywood.
KSSR-DB San Francisco, where the big bands swing.